Okay, so let's for a moment focus on the position in the Gemara that Yoshua wrote the last Hipsuk in the Torah, whether that's Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Nechemya. Now, you would think that if it's not Moshe, then the obvious person to write the next Hipsukim are Yoshua. And in fact, for anyone who did the Gemara in Bava Basra, right, that is basically the model of everything in Bava Basra, right? Yoshua katav svaro, right? Yoshua wrote his sefer, and the Gemara's question is inevitably, Yoshua dies in his book. And the Gemara answers with no proof text whatsoever. So Elazar picked up, and the Gemara says, oh, but Elazar died, so the Gemara says. So Pinchas finished it. Like, what do you want from my life, right? Pick the next available Navi, and the next available Navi finished it off. This is not, like, doesn't take great Chachma. So I would have, if you had asked me, and all I had was the Gemara in Bava Basra and the Gemara in Menachos, I would have said that that is how we got to Yehoshua writing it. For whatever reason, the Gemara does not suffice with this. And the Gemara adduces a proof text from Sefer Yehoshua. So, someone, tell me how the Gemara gets to this. Yes, in addition to the obvious. Yeah. Good. So the Gemara in Makot picks up on a very bizarre phrase all the way at the end of Yehoshua. The very end of Yehoshua in Perikov Dalet. Perikov Dalet, Pasuk Chavav. So we're talking less than 10 psukim from the end of the book. Vayechtov Yehoshua at Varim Ha'ila B'Sefer Torat Elohim. Yoshua writes these things b'sefer Torat Elokim, right, in the book of the Torah of God. And the Gemara in Makos introduces a machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya. Now, I will point out this is should be obvious. It is also not a major point, and probably none of you thought about this. The Gemara in Bava Basra and Menachot said that who believes that Moshe wrote, that Yoshua wrote the last Yipsuk in the Torah? Either Rabbi Yehuda or Rabbi Nechemya, right? Now the Gemara says that only one of those Shittot holds that Moshe wrote the last Yipsuk in the Torah. Obviously, whoever holds that Yoshua wrote the last Yipsukim, right, whether it was Rabbi Nechemya, is going to be the person in Makot who believes that he wrote the eight psukim, right? Because it's, right, now Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemya are arguing, right? There's just a lot of anonymous names going on, right? We don't know who said what, but whoever it is going to align. We just will never know who that is, okay? Close parentheses, doesn't really matter, but that's fine. So the Gemara says that what does the phrase Torah, Sefer Torah Elokim mean? It brings two possibilities. What are the two possibilities? I know you even know the answer to this question. I talked with you, several of you, during Chavrusa. What is the Gemara answer? Oh, Gavi, you're not talking. Nate, answer for Gavi. What does Gavi want to say? What are the two possibilities? What does the phrase Sefer Torah Elokim mean for the Gemara?
Either the last Sefer Elokim or God said, what is referring to
Oh, I don't remember. To the Pesukim of Bar Miklat, right? This is not like, I'm not trying to trick you. Okay, now, let's be careful. How do each of those interpretations understand the phrase, B'Sefer Torah Elokim? So the easy one. According to the position that it's the last Pesukim of the Torah, how do they understand the words, B'Sefer Torah Elokim? In the Torah, thank you. In the Torah, that was easy, right? What we call colloquially the Torah. How does the position who thinks that it's the psukim of Ari Miklat, meaning Perkhof Aleph in Yoshua, Daniel? Yeah, in his book, he recapitulated that which is found B'Sefer Torah Elokim, right? That which is in the Torah. It's not that he wrote in the Torah, it's that he wrote in his book that which is found in the Torah. Okay? Now, the problem that the Aruch Laner already highlights is that pasuk means nothing like what the Gemara says it means, right? It means nothing. And nothing like what the Gemara says it means, and this actually, certain people this bothers, right? There are people who just don't care about these other things. I do care about these types of things, right? What is the context of Perek Yoshua? Good, right? He's making a new covenant. By the way, parenthetically, right? You know how Chazal say that in the time of Esther, in the time of the Megillah, the Jews re-accepted the Torah? Yes, we're aware of this Midrash, this Gemara. Kimu v'kiblu ha'yudim, kimu mashu kiblu kvar. Right, they re-accepted the Torah in the time of the Megillah. Right, so that's a Midrash, a very important Midrash, right, Gemara actually, but it appears in multiple places. But al pi pshat, the Jews really do accept the Torah again in Yehoshua, right? They really do. That's right here in Perek Chof Daled, right? If you've never gotten this far, right? Perek Chof Daled, and therefore, what does it mean? Right? It seems to mean right, like it means this covenant, right? He wrote down this covenant, he put it with the Torah that he had, right? That's what it means. It doesn't mean he wrote something in the Torah. It means this is the Aruch HaNer's problem. The Aruch HaNer's solution is what is his solution? The Aruch HaNer. This was the second source, right? Aruch HaNer. Who is the Aruch HaNer? Sorry, I should give you the names. Who is the Aruch HaNer? His name is Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. He's what? From what century and what country?
German.
Good. Very nice. Good. He's from Germany. What century? 19th. Thank you. 19th century. He's 19th century Germany. His Tshuva Sefer is Tshuvat Binyan Sion. Right? Probably his most important position, most famous position, is he is the person who introduced the notion that not religious Jews bizman hazeh have the status of Tinok Shenishba.
Of what?
Tinok Shenishba, right? People who've been captured and therefore aren't considered fully liable and aren't considered evil, right? That was him, right? That was his position in Tshuvot HaChadashot, Binyan Tzion, Tshuva Chav Gimel. So that's Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. But it is a pretty standardly possession. He introduced it in Tshuva Chav Gimel. It was reiterated by Rav David Tzvi Hoffman in Melamed Lahu El Choftet, by the Maharshag in a tshuva that he wrote to America, which is interesting in the 19th century. Moshe Feinstein writes this in several places. It becomes really accepted, but he's the one who introduces it. So what's his solution here? How does he deal with this? Again, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but how does he deal with this? Right, he says, I explained this to at least one of you. What does he say? What's his solution? His solution is? Yeah, it primarily means that he wrote this Brit and everything, but because it uses that weird phrase, Sefer, Torah Elohim, so it has a secondary meaning, which is whatever it is in the Gemara. Okay, no, there's nothing like too conceptual here. I just want you to notice this, that methodologically, as Rav Moshe Lichtenstein told me when I was in Shir many, many years ago, trust nobody. That's the number, Yosef hates when I say this. Number one rule of learning, trust nobody ever. Okay? Ever, ever, ever. Don't trust anybody. If they say something, and they say something means something, then look it up. Okay? Look it up.
Even if they don't source it.
What?
They don't source
it. No, even if they source it, look at the source. Don't just assume it means what they say it means. Look it up. That doesn't mean they're lying to you, but it means that what they are saying is not necessarily obvious, and you at least have to understand why they said what they said. But don't just take their word for it, ever. I don't care if that's Chazal, I don't care if that's Rashi, I don't care if it's Tosos, I don't care if it's the Rambam, I don't care if it's your parents. Nobody ever, 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 and especially if it's me, right? Never trust me, right? Just don't. Right, it can come to bad things.
Well, you'll end up,
okay?
Because you're going to look at all the sources it tells you afterwards.
Don't trust me. Look it up. Right, look it up. Rule of life. Because otherwise, you'll end up right. The old yeshivish joke, maybe story, maybe true. I don't know. Right, is of a certain Rosh Yeshiva in Europe that gave a. You know what Purim Torah is, right? He gave a shir on Purim Torah on Purim, and nobody was laughing because he gave a very complicated shir on a contradiction in Rambams, and he went on for an hour, and nobody is laughing. No one understands the joke except for one person who's cracking up and thinks it's the funniest thing in the world. And they asked him, "What's so funny?" He says, "Don't you get it? he made up those Rambams, right? If you don't realize that, then you miss the joke, right? You miss what's going on. Never trust me. I could make up a source for all you know. I will probably not do it, but if you never check me, then one day I will. Okay? One day. Okay. If I make up a Masechta, if I make up a Masechta and you don't notice, I will be very upset.
Yes.
Okay?
Do that.
Right? If I start quoting things that don't exist and you have no idea, or start quoting books in Tanakh that don't exist, right?
You know.
Will you? Really,
Yeah, no, but we won't know.
This is like the people who are like, Yoel, that's not a book. You made that up. No, it's a book. He's a Navi. He's a prophet. I didn't make that up. Right? It's a nice little book in Treyazar. Okay. And I just gave you that both Targum Yonatan and Rashi quote this tradition. Right? Quote this this tradition. Okay? That is small. I just wanted to get that out there. The only thing I want to ask here is, why did the Gemara need this? Right? Why did the Gemara need this? Guys, right? Why did the Gemara need this? Right? Remember, in the Gemara in Baba Basra, every time you have psukim that are written by someone later, does the Gemara provide a proof text? No. It just finds the next available person, or Navi, or leader, or something. Why here does the Gemara feel compelled to provide a proof?
Well, whether or not it's a lesser, whether or not it's written by Yeshua,
I think Max is right, right? I think the reason the Gemara cares here is because Yeshua is a book of Nevuah. It's not the Torah. So if Yeshua wrote it, or Shmuel wrote it, right, or Elazar wrote it, or Pinchas wrote it, like, it doesn't really make a difference, right? Like, so Yeshua wrote it, so it's a book of Nevuah. Pinchas wrote it, it's still a book of Nevuah, right? And if they're wrong, by the way, what hangs on that? Nothing, right? If they're wrong that Elazar didn't write it, but Pinchas wrote all those psukim in both Yeshua's death and Elazar's death, what hangs on that? Nothing, right? It is still a book of Nevuah. It doesn't matter, right? It does matter who wrote the Torah, right? It does matter which Navi wrote it. So they can't just assume, oh, well, it's the next available Navi, right? I think part of the reason Chazal are looking for a Pasuk is because it's the Torah we're talking about, right? And therefore, there is a difference between Moshe's Nevuah and anybody else's Nevuah. How do I know?
Because it says so.
Good! Where does it say so?
In the Torah.
In the Torah! Good! Right? I'm not trying to trick you. Right? 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 Lo kei Navi Moshe b'chol beiti neman hu panim el panim, etc. Right? There are multiple places in the Torah where the Torah emphasizes Moshe's Nevuah is unique. Moshe's Nevuah is different from other Nevi'im, and therefore, to allow anybody to write in the Torah is a big deal, hence our entire sugya. And therefore, it is, I think, necessary, at least if you can find one, to provide a proof text for it. Okay? That's my guess. Right, that's my guess. It could just be that they thought they had a proof text, but as the Aruch HaNer notes, it's not a very good proof text. If you're not looking for a proof text, it's not a very good proof text. Right? Because it's not really what it means. Right? That's not the main meaning of it in context. I assume they're looking for it because this whole sugya is novel from beginning to end. The notion that someone wrote in the Torah besides for Moshe. Okay? Okay. That's just for completeness. Now we get to controversial stuff. I'm sorry, I can't help it, right? This is where we are, right? This has brought, right? This sugya has brought me here, right? I'm not trying, right? I know we have shirim here, like controversial issues or controversial whatever. That's not, I didn't like give this shir to get to this point. I don't mind, but whatever, right? Okay, but here's the problem, okay? What drove the Gemara to claim that the last eight psukim were different? Again, I'm not tricking you, right? What led the Gemara to say that the last eight psukim are different than the rest of the Torah? What? No. Not the Yachid. Why did the Gemara? How did the Gemara know the last eight psukim were different? Because Moshe is dead, right? Moshe is dead, right? Not complicated, right? We already mentioned the problem is that this doesn't fully tell the story. Why doesn't it fully tell the story? Because, right, where does the problem potentially start? Yeah, when he disappears, never to return. Right, we've said this several times. When Moshe disappears, right, again, if the problem was, how does Moshe write about something in past tense that didn't yet happen, then at which point he never returns to the Jewish people and they never find it, right? It's not like,
no.
You can't say that he wrote it and left it by his grave. Why not?
No, he left it on the mountain where it says which mountain he went to.
Yes, but they don't know where that is, right?
They don't know where the grave is. The grave isn't by the mountain, though.
Right, we could come up with it, right? We could justify it, right? We could say he left it on the mountaintop, away from his grave, and they found the mountain and the papers.
It says where the mountain is
viewed. Yeah, holy out. You're right. Look, Darius is right. It could be that they found Har Nevo, they just couldn't find his grave, right? And he left it there. Again, it could be that he made a parchment airplane. I don't know if that works. It's, you know, parchment from hide, right? Like the Sefer Torah. I don't know if they fly. I don't know. We can try it later, right? If you can make a
tablet airplane.
No, they use tablet.
Yeah, tablet. But the Torah is written on...
Yeah, now it is, but then I don't know if they have.
Whatever it was, you know, I don't... Look, a tablet airplane definitely doesn't work, right? That's what we call the broken luchot, right? Right? We've been there, we've done that, right? We're not doing this again, right? If you throw tablets off a mountain... Look, either I can prove it to you from Mitzius, and I can take a piece of a tablet and smash it on the mountain, and you'll see that it'll break. Alternatively, I can bring a pasuk and say, look, Moshe threw it down, and hey, it broke, right? So if reality isn't a good enough of a proof, it's a pasuk, right? Whichever you take as a proof more, right?
As long as it's a pasuk.
As long as it's a pasuk, right? Okay.
But again, they were being led through the wilderness by clouds and,
yeah, so we could say that we could say all types of things. We could say that Moshe, that it flew on a cloud. You can come up with whatever you want. You can say whatever you want, right? But again, that's fine, right? But it is still true that 12 psukim before the end of the Torah, right? If we really want to be completely honest about at which point, right, you at least need to start explaining how those psukim got back to the Jewish people. The problem is exacerbated, admittedly, in pasuk hey when Moshe dies. But the problem begins in Pasuk Aleph, right? It begins. Vayal Moshe Mevot Moav Ar Nevo, Rosh HaPisgah, Shalpanei Recho, Vayareo, Adonai Kol Eretz HaGedot Adan, etc. Right? Once he goes up to the mountain never to return, right, it starts getting difficult. And there was somebody, right, who was bothered by this, right? Again, it's not everybody, right? And Darius is right. You can solve this problem, and in a minute we'll see someone who did, right? But who was bothered by this problem? The Ibn Ezra, right? The Ibn Ezra was bothered by this problem. And he calls it, he seems to call it anyways, right? The Sod Hashtem Asar. So now, if you go to the sources for a minute, these, the old ones. Remember the old ones? Right? Old ones, okay? So look at the moment for the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra writes on Pasuk Aleph, right? Vaya al Moshe, lefi da'ati. I think that from this point, 12 psukim before the end of the Torah, Yoshua wrote it. Ki achar shala Moshe, what? One. Right at the top. Right? Ki achar shala Moshe lo katav uvederech nivua katavo. Because after Moshe left, he didn't write. Ve'aed ve'ereyu Hashem ve'gam v'yom Hashem elav ve'gam v'egvor ara yom hazeh divrei Yehoshua v'yitachin shekatav zeh b'achrit yamav. So he says he wrote it, and then he actually says something which is even more shocking, right? He says two things very surprising here, right? And I want to highlight both of them, okay? Because let's be very clear about the problem that is being created here. As the Gemara outlines, it is a radical statement to say that Moshe didn't write the whole Torah. Yes? You're all with me. But the Gemara said it about the last eight psukim. So if we want to, we can always just say Moshe wrote the entire Torah except possibly that which Chazal told us he didn't write. Right? Ibn Ezra makes two moves that are both scary, and we're about to get to a scarier one. Right? One is that he expands it from 8 to 12. And then he does something else that is also shocking, which is, when does he think that Yehoshua wrote it? When does he think he wrote these psukim? Bisof ba'achrit yamav. Right, not right after Moshe died, but when Yehoshua died. Right, at the end of Yehoshua's life, he wrote these psukim. Why does he think that? Right, why does he say that? Look at the Ibn Ezra. What word leads him to believe that?
Ad hayom hazeh.
Ad hayom hazeh. That the pasuk says that Moshe's grave is not known until today, which implies the time has passed since his burial. Right? That this is a meaningful statement. Right? It could be.
Yeah, that could mean he, right, even after whatever time he showed.
Correct. It could be a day later. It could be a week. But again, Ibn Ezra makes two moves. Right? They're both radical. One is he expands Chazal's claim from 8 to 12. And the second is that he assumes that this, when it says Yeshua wrote them, it doesn't mean Yeshua wrote them like 5 minutes later. It means that the Torah was incomplete for Naniach decades.
Why should we care?
What?
Why should we care? So Yeshua wrote it. It was in his lifetime. Still, it's what the Gemara said. It fits one of the...
Well, it actually doesn't. He expanded it from 8 to 12.
Okay, so besides that, you know, if we said about just the 8.
Correct, and admittedly, you could read this into Parakov Dalet of Yehoshua, how Chazal understood it, right? That he wrote the Sefer Torah Elohim, right? Which is at the end of his life, so you could read it. It's not crazy. Okay, now, Rabbeinu Bechaye, or Achayim, many people are very, 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 very bothered by what the Ibn Ezra said, right? They are very bothered by what the Ibn Ezra said, and they said, this cannot be, right? It cannot be. Right? If Chazal said the last eight psukim were not written by Moshe, I can swallow it as a possibility. But nobody has the right to expand that, right? To claim that more was not written by Moshe. So if you look at Rabbeinu Bachya, he says, right, in no uncertain terms, ve'eino emet, ve'ein pirusho nachon. It is not true, it is not right. Right? Aval, let's listen to his language. Right, this is also on page 1, right? Aval hanachon is after it's where it's underlined. Aval hanachon lahamin v'hakabalah ha'amitit. It is proper to believe, the proper mesorah is yesh lanu ki Moshe katav haTorah kula. Now, this is interesting because he actually rejects Rabbi Yehuda. He doesn't just reject Ibn Ezra. He also rejects Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah. He says, I don't like this whole thing. I don't buy any of it. Moshe wrote the whole Torah, Mi Breshit Ad Leinei Kol Yisrael. What pasuk is Leinei Kol Yisrael, by the way? Thank you. Those are the last words in the Torah. You should remember this, right? For a moment, close your eyes. Imagine you're in Shul at Simchas Torah.
Whoa.
What do we say after Leinei Kol Yisrael? Thank you. Chazak, chazak. Very good. Right? Chazak, chazak. Because it is the end of the Torah. Leinei Kol Yisrael.
What class is this? Gemara, or is that the Masorah class?
It's Gemara.
Okay.
V'hakol mipi ha'gvura, and all is from the Lord. So it's as if Moshe is writing from a primordial text, ot beot, letter for letter. Vizot he dot Rabbi Meir. Now this is Rabbi Meir or Rabbi Shimon in different girsaot, right? Ours. Shamar Avshar Sefer Torah Chaser Achad Moshe Omer Kol Sefer Torah Hazeh El Hakadosh Baruch Hu Omer Moshe Kotev B'dema. Now this is amazing to me, is that Rabbeinu Bachya is so bothered by the possibility that Moshe didn't write the whole Torah that not only does he reject the Ibn Ezra, but he explicitly takes on Chazal, right, and takes sides, right. It cannot be. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemiah are just wrong. Right? Rabbi Shimon, or according to his Gersa, Rabbi Meir, is just right. Moshe wrote the Torah, right? Which shows you that he is so bothered theologically by the possibility that Moshe didn't write the whole Torah, that again, not only is he willing to take on the Ibn Ezra, but he is willing to, with conviction, take on a member of Chazal and say, you're just wrong. Right? You're just wrong. Right? That's already... I want you to just think about that. Right? And then what does he do? He says, "V'nir Ali she'ain l'tmaim yachdo Moshe." Don't worry about it. I know Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Yehuda and Mechemia were worried about this, but don't worry about it, because how can he write about the future? Answer in one word. He's a navi. Thank you. Right? He says, "Big deal." He's a navi. Right? Nivua. Fine. One word. Prophecy. One word. Nivuah. Right? Right? Nivuah. He is a prophecy. And he says, that's what Nevi'im do. They write, and he says, Shekol Nevi'im Nohagim Amin Haga Zebidivrehem Ledivar Avar Bimakom Atin. Right? They always talk about the past. The future in the past tense is not a big deal. It's called knowing the future. Because God told you so. Right? If you thought that Rabbeinu Bachya was upset by the Ibn Ezra, the Orach Chaim is worse. The Orach Chaim is even angrier. And what does he say? Ein Ra'oi. No, that's Amos. Thank you. Ve'ein Ra'oi Lechtov Kedrim Eila. He said, first of all, it is improper to write such things. And then he says, just look at his language. This is not me. It is incorrect to write this. I've heard people confused by this, and it led to heresy. This is what idolaters say. Right? This is what idolaters say. Let all such words and anything similar sink into the ground, never to be heard again. Right? Well, first of all, the Ibn Ezra has been dead for a long time, so he can't really do that. He can only attack the Ibn Ezra's words. He can't attack the Ibn Ezra.
No, I know, but why doesn't he say,
he's just writing angrily, okay? It's rhetoric. What do you want from my life? Okay. Now, so you see that the Ibn Ezra's claim, and this claim is undeniable, right, that he said this, this claim got people a little bit worked up. Halivai, that's all the Ibn Ezra said, but the Ibn Ezra made matters even worse.
He opened a can of worms.
Oh, did he open a can of worms, right? So, the Ibn Ezra is very discreet. He introduces this concept called the Sod HaShneimasar, the secret of the 12. But the simplest understanding of what Ibn Ezra says is that the secret of the 12 is that there are not 8, there are not 12, but there are 16. Right? There are 16. Right? And where are they? So let's look at Ibn Ezra. So the Ibn Ezra, in four other places in the Torah, argues that these are not the only psukim that were not written by Moshe, but there are yet others hidden throughout the Torah that are not Mosaic. In each pasuk, I want you to do the following. Explain to me the problem, explain to me what the Ibn Ezra might be doing, and then explain to me how you can parry or reject the claim of the Ibn Ezra if one wants to defend the traditional view that, you know, all the Torah is written by Moshe. Okay? But again, I think that was actually perfect, right? What shir is this? Is the Gemara or Masorah, right? Yes, we're doing Gemara, but as long as we're here, I need to at least introduce this to you, because at some point, someone might introduce it to you, right? And we will see that, I kid you not, this is literally, right, the beginning of biblical criticism, because Spinoza was the one who first realized, hey, right, in the modern period, hey, the Ibn Ezra is doing this, maybe we can keep going. How much of the Torah can we claim was not written by Moshe in the name of God? And it gets, you know, it just goes from there. You should not be shocked that yes, it actually exists. The Ibn Ezra did really say this, right? That doesn't mean we agree. I want to make that clear, right? But I want you to know it's there, understand where it comes from, understand how to respond, right? And understand why, even if you would accept the Ibn Ezra, you don't necessarily have to take it to the conclusions that, right, Spinoza, Udi'ime, took it to. But now let's be intellectually honest, as hard as it's going to be, and let's analyze what exactly the Ibn Ezra did here, okay? So, first pasuk in Dvarim. Who wants to read the first pasuk in Sefer Dvarim? Good, thank you for violating the prohibition of saying Dvarim Shebichtav Baal Peh. Yeah. There is such a prohibition. Yes. Dvarim Shebichtav Yatai Rashai Omro Baal Peh.
Well, that makes no sense.
I'm not saying you actually violated in that. That's subject to a machlokes, but it is a din in the Gemara. It is a din in the Gemara, and probably should be avoided. But anyways, Good. What is the problem with this pasuk? What is the problem with the pasuk? What problem exists in that pasuk? It sounds like a very innocuous pasuk. What is the pasuk? You tell me. What word? I'm not telling you. You tell me. What is the Ben? I gave you the Ben Ezra. What bothers him?
He gave a location.
Yeah, and?
So if he gave a location, no word.
Yeah, what's the problem? So why would you possibly say that this pasuk? What? Why is this pasuk? What would make someone look at this pasuk and say, oh, what's wrong with Behavior Hayardim?
Oh, does that mean he's in Israel?
It sounds like you're in Israel, correct. He's talking about the east side of the Jordan as the other side of the Jordan. That's a problem if you're Moshe writing on the east side, because when you're on the east, which is the other side?
The west.
The west. If you call the east the other side, that implies that you're on the west. But the problem is, did Moshe ever stand on the west side of the Jordan?
No.
No. How do we know?
Because he died.
Because God said, you're not going over, you're going to look at it, and then you're going to die, and then he dies, right? Again, my same thing, I'm not tricking you. How do we know? We know because the Torah says so, right? Not tricking. So the and now look at this pasuk, and again, there were many people who tried to deny that the Ibn Ezra said what I'm pretty sure he said, right? But let's read it. Be'ever ha-yardain, on the other side of the Jordan, Bamidbar, Barava, in the desert. And now he doesn't tell you Moshe didn't write it. Look at this very cryptic phrase. V'im tavin sod hashneimasar. If you understand the secret of the 12, gam v'ichtov Moshe, v'aknani az v'aretz, bar Hashem yira'e, v'ino erso eres barzel, takir ha'emet. If you understand the secret of the 12, then you shall understand the next 4 psukim and know the truth. End of Ibn Ezra.
Wow, absolute legend.
What? The Ibn Ezra is awesome. This is the, I think, second most cryptic passage in the Ibn Ezra. The other one is so cryptic that he writes it backwards. I kid you not, he writes it backwards. I think it's Ibn Ezra, not the Rashbam, but I'm pretty sure it's Ibn Ezra. He's like so baffled, by he wants to hide it so much. So he says, now, there were people, including Spinoza, who realized what the Ibn Ezra said there. Because what is the likeliest interpretation? What is the Sod HaShneimasar? Right, remember, he takes 8, turns it into 12, right? The most likely unit of 12 for the Ibn Ezra is the 12 things, 12 psukim not written by Moshe, because it doesn't seem like Moshe can write them, right?
Oh my God.
And now
he says here that you will understand
the if you understand the secret of the 12, then you will understand the next 4 psukim, I'm about to quote, and you will understand the truth, takir ha'emet, right? He is about as ambiguous as you can get. But as many people have pointed out, what he seems to be saying, right, is that there are 4 other psukim in the Torah, in addition to the 12 he has already identified, which were not written by Moshe.
What's the retort to that?
So now let's look at what?
How do you
retort?
Oh, good. Now you tell me, what is the retort to this? Retort to number, let's assume that this is what the Ibn Ezra means on proof on pasuk number 1. How would you respond to this? It's actually not so hard. How would you respond to it?
Well, I mean, the way I always thought of it is, it's saying down across the that
yeah, but why would you call the east side the other side? If you're on the east side.
Well,
it's not, I don't think it's actually so complicated. Why would you say it? No, not north and south. It is clearly east and west is how we understand the Jordan.
Talking from the perspective of Israel?
Yeah, we talk from the... Because you don't have to be in Israel to talk from the perspective of Israel. Right? The response is just, what are you talking about? The vantage point of the Torah is Israel. Right? Meaning... Right? Meaning, this would be the response, is that Israel is our, you know... is where, like, the Jewish people are supposed to be, and therefore if you're not in Israel, you are on the other side. Right? Even if you're, right, it's the way that when we're in Chutz La'aretz, right? How is it that we live in Chutz La'aretz and we still call it Chutz La'aretz? Right? We're not Chutz from the Aretz we're in now. Right? We're not, but yeah, but our mindset is Israel, and therefore we are outside of it. Right? You know, it's like New Yorkers. No matter where they are, everyone else is an out-of-towner.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
I'm an out-of-towner.
No, you're not.
Right? Right? Your vantage... Right? So, I don't think the Ibn Ezra is at all mukhrach here. What?
What is mukhrach?
Except... Oh, mukhrach is... It's not like... It's not necessary, irrefutable, right? It's not like, right, you're not forced to say this at all, right? Meaning, I think it's easily solvable, right? I'm not, like, compelled by the Ibn Ezra's problem here, okay? Right, so again, I want to make this clear. By outlining what the Ibn Ezra says, I do not want to tell you that I think the Ibn Ezra is right, right? But I do want to make it clear this is something that was countenanced by someone who was still within the Masora, even if extremely problematic, right? Okay. But that's Pasuk 1. Next Pasuk that he references is Dvarim Lamed Aleph Tet. So who wants to read Lamed Aleph Tet? And then tell me what problem the Ibn Ezra seems to have had here. Who wants to take it? Nate, why don't you take it? Lamed Aleph Tet.
I told Moshe as a Torah Hazos. Moshe wrote this Torah, Vayitna El HaKohanim B'nei Levi, and he gave it to the Kohanim, the sons of Levi, Hanosim as Aaron Bris Hashem, Ve'al Kol Zeknei Yisrael. He gave it to the
Kohanim. Good. What problem, why does Ibn Ezra include this Pasuk in his cryptic list of Pasukim that he thinks Moshe didn't write?
Well, it shows that Moshe completed the Torah and he gave it over.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Moshe's written about as if he's not the author. It's third person, right? Moshe completed it, right? It's writing. Is this really a problem?
No.
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly do not understand what bothered Ibn Ezra so much.
Well,
like,
except that if you go back...
No, I understand. The Torah, it sounds like...
He wrote the... That's also in the past tense when he...
Correct, he gave it... Correct, I mean, this is building off the problem of the eight, right? Which is Moshe wrote the whole Torah, but he hasn't done it yet. Right? Because he hasn't written it yet because he's not dead, right? Right?
Also, there's a bunch of things right now,
but again, not like the biggest deal, right? Like, I'm not like super bothered by this. Moshe sometimes writes about himself in third person, right? That happens in the Torah. And we've already dealt with the question of the whole Torah. That's exactly the machlokas from Shimon, right? Rabbi Huda. This one doesn't bother me really at all, but it bothered him. Okay, good. Breishit Yud Bet Vav. Who wants to take Breishit Yud Bet Vav? Right, I'm doing nothing mechudash here. I'm just copying what he says. Yeah, Dov.
Vayavor Avram da'aretz ad makam shem ad elon zmoret da'kani az va'aretz. When the Kanaanim were still in the land.
Good. So Avram was in Israel. Ad mikom shem. Right? So Avram passed into them until elon zmoret da'kani az va'aretz. Now, translate those words, Hakanani Azbaaretz. We're still in the land, right?
They were still in the
land. Now, why does that create a problem with Ibn Ezra?
Because Hakanim left, were kicked out in Yoshua.
Yes, thank you, right? The Ibn Ezra is bothered by this because, wait, what do you mean the Kananim were still in the land? In Breishit, they are, and in Shmot, and Vayikra, and Bamidbar, and Dvarim, meaning the entire lifetime of Moshe, they are... Shocker.
What?
Still in the land, right? Which implies that they were still in the land and now they are not.
But you can resolve
right?
it by saying Moshe was thinking, oh, they're going to get kicked out.
So you could do that, or you could tell me that what does Oz mean?
Now.
Already.
Yeah.
Right? Oz can mean since, or still, or it can mean already. They were already in the land, right? Right? And that's, the Ibn Ezra himself says, raises both possibilities. He says, Yitachen she'eretz Kanaan tafsa Kanaan miyad acher v'im einenu kein yesh lo sod v'amaskil yidom. Right? Either it means, right, that it had already been conquered by Kanaan, right? Otherwise, this is a secret. And the one who understands the secret shall be silent. I'm sorry that I keep revealing this, right? He's very, very, very quiet about this, right?
What?
By the way, the way you know that he probably is saying something which borders on heresy is because every time he says it, he says, this is a secret and shh, right? If it was totally not controversial, he didn't have to say that, right? So he says, either it means that they were already in the land, or it's a secret, shh, right? The Ibn Ezra lives in 12th century, if I got that right. He travels around a bit. He is in right. He meets all types of interesting people along his travels. He visits England for a little bit, which is sort of rare, right? Yeah. Okay, good. The next one.
And that was at that time, yeah, it was the Middle Ages, so...
He's doing a bit of traveling. He's an interesting guy. Okay, the next one that bothers him is... Breshit Chavbet Yudalid. Right? Who wants to take Yudbet Chavdalid? Max, don't take it? It's like the... It's the third from the bottom here. Right? So this is in the middle of the story of the Akedah, and he calls it? Right, God shall see. What problem does Ibn Ezra have with this Pasuk? The second half of the Pasuk, which we call nowadays Har Hashem Yireh. Right? Wait, what? Nowadays, when do we call it the mountain that God sees? Later, when it becomes the place, at least as Chazal understand it, as the Makom HaMikdash. Right? Meaning, but it's clearly writing in past tense about, right? Nowadays, we say this. Right? Now, look how cryptic the Ibn Ezra is about what he wants to say here. Look at what he says. He has two words. Be'ele HaDvarim. You want to understand what this means? Look in the first pasuk of Dvarim. That's it. That's all he says. Right? He is successfully very cryptic on every single one. He has one more. Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph. Right? This is Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph. What is Gimel Yud Aleph? Daniel, why don't you dig it? Either Daniel.
But again, you can rebut that.
Oh, yeah, sure. You could say, like...
At the time of Moshe, it was called this.
Yeah, exactly. Right? This is not a God. Each one of these, by the way, is not, like, super compelling. It's not like I'm totally bothered by this. I'm just highlighting it.
And since it's where it could be...
Look, even at least in one case, the Ibn Ezra himself raises both possibilities.
Yeah.
Okay, one more. Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph.
Should I read about that?
Please don't. Okay, go. Dvarim Gimel Yud Aleph. Okay, Daniel, take it.
Okay.
Okay, so what does that mean?
He was the only guy left of Urfaim. Being the last surviving giant. His bed was made of iron, and now it's in.
Good, and what bothers him?
In the town of Urabah.
Good, what bothers him about this pasuk?
It's when's now. Like, where's...
Yeah, well, it really, it's not just that. It's that the Rephaim are not conquered yet. They're conquered in Yoshua, right? The Mieter are Rephaim, right? That whole battle doesn't quite happen yet, right? What? Right, is they were left of the giants, but they are, right? That battle hasn't happened yet. Now it's not fully true, because there have been battles against Rephaim before. There's just yet another one in Yoshua, right? Meaning we talk about these battles in Bereishit also, right? That there are battles against the Rephaim, the Nephilim, and all these types of people. So not so bad. There now.
It's pretty unambiguous that when it says key rock O Melchizedek.
Yeah, and that right, and that's the problem.
It's not like, oh, just him and his band, and they like.
Correct. You could say just now. You could solve it. You could say, well, just Og and a few, or Og had children, right? And then that's who we're fighting. We're a different group of giants.
No, but it says rock Og Melchizedek.
Correct. Yeah, it's not great. It, you know, you could deal with it.
It's like very unambiguous. Just
right
old.
Now, yeah. Look, okay. So, who? As I said, right. This is where the Ibn Ezra already gets a bit dangerous, right? Where the Ibn Ezra isn't just taking the 8 and expanding it to 12. He is looking through the Torah and picking up Sukkim that he just feels like contextually can't be written by Moshe. Admittedly, not so many. Right?
But still extending all the way to pages.
But yeah, okay. And like I said, this was so problematic that when suddenly in the modern era there were people who, you know, didn't love the notion of the Torah being divine, right, suddenly jumped on this. And again, it really gives me no great pleasure to quote Spinoza. I really don't like Spinoza very much, right? But Spinoza in Theologica Politicus, in the middle of his heretical statements, he says, well, it's not such a chiddush. The Ibn Ezra already started it. What do you want from my life? And he writes, to treat the matter in logical order, I shall first deal with misconceptions regarding the true authorship of the sacred books, beginning with the Pentateuch. The author is almost universally believed to be Moses, a view so obstinately defended by the Pharisees that they have regarded any other view as heresy. It was for this reason that Ibn Ezra, a man of enlightened mind and considerable learning, who was the first, as far as I know, to call attention to the misconception, did not venture to explain his meaning openly, and expressed himself somewhat obscurely in words which I shall not here hesitate to elucidate, making his meaning quite plain. Meaning, Ibn Ezra tried to hide it, but I'm a kofer, so I'm going to tell you what he means. I'm very openly, so I don't have any hesitation. Yes. Yes, he's normally sort of pegged as the first person in the modern era to do this. The Book of Moses was inscribed in its entirety on no more than the circumference of a single altar, and this altar, according to the rabbis, consists of only 12 stones. From this it follows, the Book of Moses must have required less space than the Pentateuch, right? And then he has other proofs, right, that he argues, right, that the Torah is just, you know, Moshe wrote a smaller version. He wrote certain laws, right, on a bunch of tablets, but not the altar. This I say, is what our author meant by the reference to the mystery of the 12, unless he was referring to the 12 curses in the aforementioned chapter of Deuteronomy. Right, he said maybe he means something else, some 12 something else. Perhaps he believed that there could not have been contained in Moses' book of law so as to blind the people by oath to observe the said laws. Or again, he may have wished to draw attention to the last chapter of Deuteronomy concerning the death of Moses, a chapter consisting of 12 verses. But there is no need here to give closer scrutiny to these and other conjectures. We have now set forth the view in Ibn Ezra on the passage of the Pentateuch, which he cites in support, yet he did not call attention to all such passages, nor even the principal ones, for there are many other passages in these books and of great significance which have yet to be cited. And hence, Spinoza takes his matir from the Ibn Ezra and begins his systematic, right, heretical work of arguing that the Torah is not written by Moshe, right, and explaining why he is a heretic.
What was the whole thing about the author, that there were different places where Moshe wrote the Torah?
Well, right, the Torah in many places says that Moshe wrote the Torah, but he writes it on like a few stones, right? Right, which he says, doesn't that imply that the Torah that Moshe wrote, whatever it was, or even if you believe the Torah itself, is a smaller unit than everything we have known as the Torah?
Oh, meaning you can't write it.
Correct. Right, that's like his, okay.
That it was expanded.
Now, yes, exactly. So now, this is why this gets touchy, right? And I want to be very clear here, right? The reason that, if you asked me, right, it's clear that even 500 years ago, 700 years ago, what the Ibn Ezra was saying was already controversial. How do I know? First of all, he keeps it a secret. Second of all, anyone who realized what he said yelled at him. Right, like Rabbi Nobachia, right, the Archaim, right, even on just the 12, forget the next four, right, forget the 12, they're bothered by the 8 that Chazal already posit, right, but I want to make a very important point, okay, yes, it's controversial, but in the time of Rabbi Nobachia, or the time of Ibn Ezra for that matter, for Ibn Ezra, what is the alternative? If Moshe didn't write it, then what? Yoshua wrote it, some Navi wrote it. What, as controversial as what the Ibn Ezra is saying is, and it is, right? And as we saw, it's not even necessarily a great read of the Psukim, right? And easily defendable, right? But even putting aside the fact that what he's saying is not at all necessary, right? And even putting aside the fact that people disagree with him and there are alternative ways of reading it, in the end of the day, for the Ibn Ezra, the alternative was that this was still divine. It was just written by a different Navi. And even there, people are screaming and yelling, right? The problem, and this is why it's unfair to the Ibn Ezra, right? What Spinoza is doing is fundamentally unfair. Because Spinoza is saying, right, and modern biblical criticism will try to make an easy line right? Look, there were already people who were traditional rabbis who claimed that not everything in the Torah is written by Moshe. And therefore, we are legitimate in believing that the Torah is all written by human beings without any divine input, right? Like, that's like the line that they go, right? That is totally and completely unfair, right? I want to make this 100% clear. That for the Ibn Ezra, even if you accept every radical claim that he makes, all he is saying is that there are psukim which are equally divine, but penned by a different prophet, right? It is unfair to claim that Ibn Ezra is in any way, right, the precursor to a denial of the divinity of Torah. That's not fair, right? Yes.
If we go by the line that's thinking that Yeshua did write Sukkim inside of the Torah, and we're under the impression that Moshe wrote most of the Torah up until at least the last Sukkim, that's what we were thinking until here. Doesn't that sort of get into the idea of the divinity of the Torah being a sort of lesson?
Again,
because
right?
It states that Moshe did.
Okay. So again, this is why I think Rabbi Nubachya is not even willing to accept Chazal, right? Nope, I accept Reb Shimon, right? It's not true, the whole surgery of Moshe, because at some level, yes, right? At some level, saying that it's not written by Moshe, even the last day Psukim, is that you see in the Gemara, Reb Shimon's already angry by this, right? Reb Shimon's already angry. So yes, it's already a big move. And then to expand that to 12 Psukim is a big move. To expand it to 4 random Psukim, scattered that Chumash, is an even bigger move, right? So obviously that's why Rabbi Nubachya is angry, and that's why the Ibn Ezra is so hesitant and says it's a secret, right? And that's why... But with all those qualifications and with all those reasons therefore to reject the Ibn Ezra, right? Again, I want to emphasize, as we went through in each pasuk, what the Ibn Ezra says in each case is not mukhrach, right? Is not necessary, right? But still, even if you accept the Ibn Ezra, right, it is totally and completely unfair to use him as a proto-Bible critic. He is not, right? He, in the end of the day, is at best, right, or at worst, however you want to look at it, claiming that a few psukim are written by another prophet, and only because those psukim, right, and he's forced into it, yeah.
Yeah, but again, if they're in the middle of gracious, how could they have been like, they're like, oh, I don't know, maybe eventually
the prophet will write
anything here. And this is, again, I'm not saying what the Ibn Ezra said is not problematic. I'm not even saying that what the Ibn Ezra said is right, right? I think we've made it clear that each of the Ibn Ezra's claims can be negated, right? I understand, and you're saying, well, what he's saying is actually pretty radical. If not that radical, it's still radical because it's saying that for a while there was a pasuk, or at least a phrase, right, that was added later and there was just like a gap. Right?
But that makes no sense in terms of...
Of course, I mean, you could have just said that... I mean, it could be that the Ezra thinks that Avram... The pasuk said Avram called it Har Hashem Yireh, and then Yoshua wrote Asher Yameh Hayom Bahar Hashem Yireh, or something like that. I don't know. Right? Which is weird. I get it. Not necessarily the whole pasuk, maybe just the phrase,
but
right?
But that opens another can of worms.
Meachos.
After editing the Torah.
Correct. Again, like I said, I'm bringing you into this sugya because it is part of our sugya, right? It's related. It emerges from our sugya. It should bother you, right? But I'm being honest with you that this exists because I want you to think about it, right? Now, again, there's a lot of reasons to reject Ibn Ezra, not just because it sounds heretical, but because, as we said, it may just be a bad textual read of the Torah, right? Definitely forget the last 12, right? But the other 4... are each negatable. And I will just point out that even the Ibn Ezra himself is not always comfortable doing this. So just to give you an example of this, look at the Breishit Lamed Vav Lamed Aleph, right? The pasuk says, "Ve'ela ha'melachim asher malchu be'eretz Edom lifnei melach melech livnei Yisrael." These were the kings that were kings in Edom before there were Jewish kings. What is the problem with that pasuk? Why might one have a problem with that pasuk?
It was written after their
Jewish. Yeah, because it took a very long time till you can say, right, that there were Jewish kings. Right? Now, the solution is just to say these are the Edom kings that we know of, right? And there still aren't Jewish kings. Right? Right, it doesn't mean all the way up till, right? It means that all, right? You could read it as these are the kings, not all the way up to Shaul, right? Because by the way, if you read that pasuk as meaning until there was a king in Israel, then you have to claim that pasuk was written not in the time of Yeshua, but like, right? But 500 years later, right? Right? In the time of Shaul, right? right? Which would obviously be radical.
At least some.
Right? At least, right? Now, at this point, there are therefore people who said, aha, this pasuk is written 500 years later. And at this point, Ibn Ezra panics, right? He panics, right? Right, and look, he says, Yesh omrim ki biderech nevuah nechteva zora parasha. He said, some say that this is prophetic. The Yitzchaki, who is a heretic, he's a Karaite, right? Amar bisvaro ki bimei Yehoshaphat nechteva. Right, claims that this is written in the time of Yehoshaphat. Now that's not just, well, let's. How many kings is that? It's a lot, right? Shaul, Ishbosheth, David, Shlomo, Rechavam, right? Aviah, right? Keep going. It's a few kings in there, right? It's a while later, right? Uperish hadarok tirsano achigam arshmo Yitzchak, and he says, and now the Ibn Ezra, not only does he panic, he gets really, really, really angry and bitter, right? And he says, uperish hadarok tirsano hachi karashmo Yitzchak. This is why people called him Yitzchak. Kol hashomea Yitzchak lo, because anyone who hears him shall laugh at him, right? Ki amar ki adaru adar ha'adomi v'amar ki adel achot techan peis v'chalila chalila, right? God forbid shahadavar kimo shediber al yimei Yehoshaphat v'sro ra'ui lihisareif. God forbid, burn his books. V'lama tamah shamanam alachim shamalchum mehem rabim. Why are you so bothered that they had kings? V'nei malchei Yisrael kevlaim b'mispar, shnei malchim krovim l'shnei malchei Yisrael. And he goes on, right? He said, this is just ridiculous. This is absurd, right? And he says, what does the pasuk mean? The last line. V'emet shepirsh l'fnei malach malach al Moshe melch Yisrael. He said, because the Torah, according to some reads, refers to Moshe as king. V'hi bishurun melech. Right, the Hebrew melech b'tasef rashei am yachad shiftei Yisrael. According to some of the Farshim, means Moshe functioned as a king. It means these were the kings up to Moshe, and that's how Ibn Ezra understands this pasuk. Okay, because.
Is Moshe ever
referred to? Yes, Vahi Bishurun Melech, which the Ben Ezra means, thinks is. That's in Chumash. Yeah, Vahi Bishurun Melech, but that's Rashi Yam Yachat Shiftei Israel. Right? That's in Mizorah Bracha.
That's in Israel.
Yes, I know.
Where is it?
It's in Mizorah Bracha.
Do you know what
possible? Second. So, you're right, I'm violating, so let me not do that. Right? In Mizorah Bracha. Right? Here's the pasuk. Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha kilat Yaakov vahi vishurun melech b'taseif rasheyam yachad shiftei Yisrael. Right? Remember Simchas Torah trap? Do I need to do that again? I'm not a musical, but that should ring some memory unless my tune is so off. Right? Should I do it again? Right? It's pasuk hey. Right? There's good reason to think it's Moshe. Again, I'll read it again. Pasuk Dalet is Torah tziva lanu Moshe morasha kilat Yaakov vahi vishurun melech b'taseif rasheyam yachad shiftei Yisrael. Right? There's good reason to think that is Moshe. / that Moshe was the subject of the previous pasuk. It's not a bad read. Right? So Ibn Ezra says it is Moshe. Now, why does the Ibn Ezra panic if he's comfortable with these things? So the Tzafnat Paneach, which is sometimes claimed to be that this is Rabbi Yosef Tov Elem, it is not. I forget his name, some random Sephardi person that I have to look up his name again. But he writes, Perush, Lefi Da'ati Amar Kacha Bavur Kim Nechtava B'Meshapat Hine Hosfu Al Torah Parsha Shleima. He said, I think the reason the Ibn Ezra panics here and isn't willing to buy it is because even though the Ibn Ezra is willing to add Tzukim, he's not willing to, if you say that this pasuk is not this whole pasuk, it's an entire unit. It's that whole list of kings. And for the Ibn Ezra, that's going too far to say that, like, Perek Lamed Vav of Breshit, the entire Perek, is written later The Ibn Ezra is not willing to buy that, meaning he's willing to take Sukkim. But Torah Amar Lo Tosif Alav. He says the Torah says don't add. V'im Yitona Toen, and maybe you'll tell me V'alo Rabbi Avraham Batzmo Ramaz B'tchilat Sefer Dvarim Tosif Nevi'im Achronim Milod Gam Sukkim B'Torah. Doesn't Ibn Ezra, isn't he okay with adding words and phrases in Sukkim? Hachuva Kiamosif Milau Pasuk the Faresh Mashikatav Moshe. He said a word or a phrase is one thing. Losif Bo Beor, it's clarifying. That's different than adding a, you know, periklam and vav operation. That's a different thing. Kimila pasuk hu perush. He said a word or a pasuk, in the end of the day, is mere commentary. Right? Meaning the Ibn Ezra will say, look, later on, so someone just scribbled in, by the way, Avram called it Har Hashem Yireh, it still is Har Hashem Yireh. Aval parsha shleima, a whole parsha hitosevet. That's called an addition. Now again, you may not buy this distinction. You might say it's all or nothing, right? But I want to be clear. I think that the Tzavon HaPaneach is right. It's unfair to the Ibn Ezra to claim that he is in any way a proto-Bible critic, right? He's not comfortable with that, right? To even if he's comfortable with more than what many other people might be comfortable with, don't put words in his mouth. Okay? Okay, so what we'll do tomorrow is just do the next one, which, if you thought that this is making you uncomfortable... Yeah. Just wait till you will be traumatized by the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, because if you think what's happening in Sfarad is weird, what's happening in Ashkenaz is even weirder. Oh, so radical. Oh, so radical. So try to read this article, and if you want to not trust this translation and you want the original Hebrew, then I will give you the original Hebrew of this. And by tomorrow, we will have finished all of this. We'll do a quick recap of this. And next week, we will pick up with the next sugya, which is the mitzvah to write a Sefer Torah. And we will move into totally non-controversial things, sort of. Well, that's not really true, because we'll see that we probably are all not keeping a mitzvah d'oraisa. So it is a strictly controversial, but in a very different way.
We're not keeping a mitzvah carbon pesach.
Well, a mitzvah that we could do. How about that? Okay?